And there was a lot of drama because in the belly dance world, even though you're not looking for it, it finds you. I had someone corner me in the hotel and say, "Why are you even competing? It's not fair. You already have a career. You should step down." This happened to me twice. I only competed twice in my life, and both times I was confronted with, "You need to step down from this race."
Hello everyone, you're listening to the Belly Dance Live podcast. I'm your host Jana Komarnitska and I'm thrilled to share a new portion of dance inspiration with you. If you are a new listener, welcome to the show. Don't forget to subscribe and receive automatic updates about our new episodes. And if you are our regular listener, welcome back. Please leave your reviews on whichever app you're listening. They really help me promote the show and spread awareness about belly dance art form. Plus, I really like hearing back from you. On this note, let's get to our today's episode. Jelena and Belly Dance Evolution are back taking their show and programs across the globe. You know how many guests we had previously on this podcast sharing how much their experience with BDE pushed their dance career. You can have it too. Audition for Jelena's latest production and join Jungle Book cast. All details at www.joinbde.com. Direct link in the show notes, joinbde.com. I hope you are truly ready for this, because today we have belly dance superstar Bozhenka as our guest, an award-winning, internationally acclaimed dancer performing and teaching worldwide. Bozhenka hosts the Mediterranean Dance Lab, a dance intensive and cultural retreat on the island of Crete in Greece, where she currently resides. She has recorded several best-selling instructional and performance DVDs and has toured extensively with the celebrated belly dance superstars as a featured soloist. Through a professional dance career of 26 years, Bozhenka has been invited to teach and perform in over 50 countries. She instructed and choreographed international superstar Shakira for her Mongoose World Tour in 2004 and for her 2010 World Tour Shakira, working with the pop diva side by side to help her hone and polish her innate skills. Bozhenka performed on stage with world music artist Alabina during her concert tour in Miami Beach in 2005, and she has entertained an assortment of celebrities including Sean Connery, Donald Trump, Madonna, Enrique Iglesias, and many others. In our today's conversation, we talked about very beginning of Bozhenka's dance story, how dance entered her life, and her relationship with her own teacher, and how it influenced not only her current teaching approach, but her career in general. We talked about epic Ahlan was Sahlan 2006 competition and reasons why she decided to compete, even despite she already had quite an established career touring together with belly dance superstars. We talked about her experience of working with Shakira for the last 20 years, not only about her creating and helping with worldwide tours, but even till today giving classes to Shakira and help her create mini choreographies for her performances. We also talked about Bozhenka's performance gigs and some funny stories. She shared one funny story performing at the event with Sean Connery as a guest. I'm pretty sure you will enjoy and laugh together with us. And we talked about Bozhenka's current projects, including the Mediterranean Dance Lab that she hosts at Crete every year, and how this experience can help dancers to grow, and all other different ways you can study and work together with such an amazing and experienced teacher. This is an example of such a brilliant and shining career, which I'm absolutely sure will be a great inspiration for all of you, for all our listeners who are in the middle of their own dance journeys and dance explorations. And it's such an inspiring talk that not only shows what is possible, but also shows the humble and thoughtful approach to life, work, dance, art, and building career as a dancer. So enjoy listening.
Discover what blocks your progress and how to overcome your training limitations. Hey, fabulous dancers, it's time to elevate your belly dance habits and take your skills to the new heights. Feeling stuck with inconsistency, unsure of progress, or craving creative vibes? I've got the remedy. Dive into our free 10-minute quiz designed to identify your main dance limitations. After the quiz, you'll get 5 to 10 personalized actionable steps, a mindset-shifting book recommendation, list of related podcast episodes, and articles to guide your dance journey. Kickstart this year by cultivating better dance habits. Curious? Check the link in the show notes and take the quiz right now. Your dance breakthrough awaits. Visit yanadanceclub.com/quiz and let the quiz light the way. And the best thing, it's totally free and takes only 10 minutes to complete. Get clarity on your dance goals and improve your practice habits. It's yanadanceclub.com/quiz. Link in the show notes.
This is such a long-awaited conversation, and I think it gets even more exciting because of that. And I'm super extremely happy to host such an amazing guest today. Bozhenka, welcome to the Belly Dance Life podcast. Thank you so much for taking time and being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. You are very gracious for inviting me, and I'm looking forward to this conversation. Yes, long-awaited conversation.
Well, I would like to start from the very, very beginning. So I know that you have a mix of Cuban, Spanish, Czech heritage, and at the same time, your hometown was Miami, US. So how, within all that heritage and family richness, how did dance, and specifically belly dance, enter your life? And did your family had any, you know, artistic vibes or artistic activities going on in general?
Yes, it's a very good question and very well phrased. My family is very artistic. My father is a classical musician. He plays the oboe. And my mother, although she was not a professional artist, she was always a huge supporter of the arts and worked during the communist era. She grew up in Czechoslovakia. Her mother is Spaniard. Her father is Czech. She was working back and forth, going to Cuba and working in the culture house. So she was always involved with the arts. And as a child, my sisters and I were born in Cuba. We were always exposed to the opera, to the theater, to the ballet. I mean, even as my mother was pregnant with us, you know, she was always going to the theater to see my father play. And so also at home, all of my parents' friends were artists. So we just grew up in a house of music and dance and poetry and art, and it was a very rich childhood, culturally rich. And so when it wasn't assumed that I was going to be an artist, but you grow up with it, you know. I grew up playing instruments, I grew up taking dance classes. And when we migrated to America, my parents couldn't afford to pay for all these lessons, but we had it in the public school systems still in America at this time. And still today, they're always threatening to take away the arts, but still to this day in the public school systems, you have music and dance classes offered to the kids in the classes. So I was exposed to my first classes actually in the public school system in America. And obviously I had the talent and I had the exposure at home, but I had the opportunity to touch instruments, to play instruments, and to take dance classes in the public school system. So I never went to an independent arts academy or dance academy. It was all through the public school system with really, I was very fortunate to have very great, passionate teachers. And as I became older, I always dabbled in music and dance, but my idea was that this was a hobby and not a career. And so I was focused on my career was more, I thought I wanted to be an educator for children, like young children. I really love early childhood. For me is particularly fascinating to speak to children, to see how they explore the world. So I always studied early childhood psychology and early childhood education. And on the side, dance and music always was there. And as I got older, I wanted to explore other forms of dance. And so I thought, well, let me explore dances from my heritage. So of course I did some flamenco, which I love. But again, I didn't identify with it. I just thought, okay, flamenco, it's beautiful. I also tried Afro-Cuban and Latin dances, and again, it was all beautiful and fun, but until I tried belly dance, that was when I just found my voice as a dancer. It just really struck me somehow. And you're right, it's not really part of my culture or heritage. So I was surprised. I always loved the music. And the music is what attracted me to it. I love Arabic music. And so through music is how I found the way that you are meant to dance these dances, this music. And then when I found the dance, I thought, wow, I love moving in this way. My body liked moving in this way. And I was fortunate to find a very good teacher in Miami. And my family, they don't think anything. They never said anything negative about it or condescending. It was quite the opposite. They were very curious and tickled by it. And they always used to ask me, what did you learn today in class? And I would show them the movements and they thought it was fantastic. And actually, my first belly dance class, I had my mother and both of my sisters were there with me. They tried the class as well. I was the only one that, stuck with it. My mother wasn't dancing. She just came to watch. So it was like a really interesting beginning because my first class I had all my important women there with me, and I just remember thinking, I'm going to stick with this because I really love it. But when I started it wasn't really typical to think I want to make a career out of this. Nobody was really having a career in belly dance. Okay, you had dancers that were gigging and were teaching, but this was not the norm. This was not so common as it is now. So that's a little bit of the how I started.
Well, but what a career you've built afterwards. That's quite a
Yes,
fascinating journey.
it really, really is. And I remember just thinking, wow, I have this opportunity, and then the next opportunity would come along, and I'd say, yes, sure, okay. And I remember always thinking, like, okay, I'm just gonna ride this wave as long as it's going. And in the beginning, I didn't start gigging right away. I danced for free at nursing homes, at parties. I danced for free so much. For free meaning I never took money, and it was always part of the dance studio that I was a part of. It was always like dancing for charity or dancing to just entertain people in elderly homes. Or I did so much of that. I'd say about 2 years. And before I, accepted a gig at a restaurant, I remember I was so nervous. And then I remember getting paid and thinking, wow, I got money for dancing, for doing something I really love. And yeah, so it happened in a very natural way. And I remember thinking, like, this is fun. I'm just going to take this opportunity. And yeah, I'll take that. And then once it started becoming a little more serious, that I trained to become a teacher at the Mid Eastern Dance Exchanges, where I started dancing and where I became a teacher, and where I did a lot of my firsts under the direction of Tamalin Dalal. And she was my first teacher and my mentor for many, many years. I still find a lot of inspiration in her. She's still a source of inspiration for me. And I think it's important to mention because I hear so many times dancers having a falling out with their teachers and not communicating anymore. And it's not that like that at all with us. She has trained so many dancers, and this is where I started in the beginning. And she trained me to become a teacher in her studio. She invited me to teach the first classes, and like that, you know, just little by little, it just started to snowball into, like you said, an incredible, amazing, unimaginable career. But that's it. That's how it happens.
That's a beautiful also example of a teacher-student relationship that can be inspiration for both students and teachers. So thank you for sharing.
Yes. I always try to emulate her teachings, her philosophy of the more you share, the more you learn, the more that comes to you. Because sometimes some people they have a different mentality of maybe not telling their students everything, or just thinking that their students will leave them. And eventually, yes, maybe your students leave you, but they never really leave you when you've been good to them. They never really forget you. And I think one way to honor your teachers is just to mention them. I mean, it never hurts to mention somebody and say, they gave me a lot, right? And that's it. I'd like to be that kind of teacher. And I really love it when my students now they remember me, or they'll say, I started with this person. It's just they honor you. It feels good.
Coming back to the beginning of our conversation, speaking about heritage, have you ever done in your life a DNA test?
Yes.
Was it according to your
Yes.
expectations, or you had some surprises?
I'll tell you, some of it was like very straightforward. I actually don't remember precisely, right? Some of it was straightforward, of course. Big percentage Spaniard, that's no surprise, because when you're coming from Cuba, you have either African heritage or European, or both at some times. And so I knew that I would have Spanish heritage. I had, of course, like Bohemian, like Slavic. What surprised me the most was 20% English.
Oh.
That was, yes. And I thought, okay, we were laughing. It was really interesting. And also West Asian. So yeah, I'm a big mix. I'm a very big mix. So it was interesting. The funniest thing was that it was like a two package for one, and so I convinced my partner to do it, and he's Greek, and he said, "Why do I have to do? I'm Greek. I'm just Greek. Why? What do you want to find out?" And I said, "No, I'm just curious, you know." And his was more entertaining because he figured that he would be just mostly Greek, and he had Italian, he had Spanish as well, North African. So it was it's always interesting. I don't really know how accurate those are, but they are fun.
Well, the reason why I ask is because we start talking about like the heritage and you were saying that you did not identify with many dancers who are directly from, let's say, your lineage that was obvious to you until you found belly dance and this connection between where we're thinking we are from and what our interest and what calls our attention. And the reason why I asked specifically about DNA, because it's just a funny side story, but my husband Pedro, he's into Arabic drums, but he's from Brazil, and he always knew
Yes.
like, oh, he has heritage in Italian, Spanish, and German. So why suddenly
Yeah.
Brazilian guy with such heritage would be interested in drumming? And it was occurring again and again, this topic, especially in Canada in art schools, etc. And then he did a DNA test, and he had some percentages from North Africa and a lot of percentage from Balkans, which he didn't expect. And he's like, here it is, that's why. So we think that our heritage is one thing, but when we do this DNA test, like it's all so obvious that most people, not everyone, but most people are such a big mix, and these lines of connection from where we are coming from and what should be logically our interests in, they are very, very sort of blurry from this perspective, because we are all from everywhere, technically.
I agree, and I think that it's in the human species to want to connect with dance and drum. I don't think it's specific to one region, or to one culture. I think in general, it's done differently, it's expressed differently, but I think everyone wants to connect. And music and dance connect people. And I think the beat of the drum is like the this primal language. So I think it's you can it's for me, I always think, when drums are going, when drums are beating, and someone is just sitting still, I always wonder, how can they just hear this beat and sit perfectly still? I personally can't. I find it very hard. I have to at least, like rock my upper body, even if I'm sitting in a chair. So
That's
it's
cool.
just me.
In terms of your career, you had so many things. Like I really like was very difficult to even think like, okay, if to direct our conversation in which exact events, etc. But one of the highlights of your career, if you jump forward, was in 2006. It was when you won Ahlan Wasahlan Festival. And I know back then it was a huge competition of like 150 dancers, but not only you won the competition and you kind of became even more known and successful in ballet dance field or area, but you also got really showcased and highlighted by US press. So that's also like not very common, because especially today when we are talking about or some dancer winning ballet dance festival, even if it's a big one, prestigious, it kind of stays within the ballet dance community. It doesn't really have much showcase overall in like press in their own countries, etc. But can you share a little bit about that experience? How was it? How was your competition experience before that event? And what kind of memories do you have right now about Ahlan Wasahlan 2006?
Well, I was not I've only entered two competitions, belly dance competitions in my life, and I won both of them. So I thought, you know what? I'm not even gonna try a third time. I'm just gonna leave it, But the first competition that I did was in the year 2000, and it was called Miss America of the Belly Dance, and it was in San Francisco, and it was the first belly dance competition in America at that time. And it's I don't think it's any longer hosted. The organizers have since passed away, unfortunately, but it was a really nice event. And so I did that competition in 2000, and when I won that title, I had quite a bit of recognition, like you said, in the belly dance community. And that's what you expect. That's why you do it. And then thanks to that, I was able to bring more attention to the fact that I could teach. Now there's a lot more festivals happening, and so this festival was huge. There were thousands of students. I think there were over 2,000 students in this particular year when I went. It was like at its peak. And it's the Raya Hassan was the organizer. Mm-hmm. So, it, of course, you know, the judges were Mona Said and Dr. Mogadawi and like Farida Fahmy. There were so many eyes on the competitors. And again, Tamlin Dalal, my teacher at this time, she was teaching at the festival. That was one reason why I went, because I wanted to reunite with her. And I had been touring with Belly Dance Superstars, left my things in London, I believe. Yes, I left all my bags. The tour had finished, and I left all my suitcases and everything at a friend's house in London, and then went to Egypt with only one costume. I had really no intention in competing. I wanted to perform, and I wanted to take the folkloric workshops, because those are the workshops that have smaller numbers, because the workshops with the big stars are always packed. And so I really wanted to take the folklore, the workshops with the people that are more obscure or unknown, but they are fantastic because they have live musicians, and it's really nice. So I went with that intention. And when I got there, I remember Tamlin saying to me, listen, why are you performing? Why do you want to perform and not compete? And I said to her, well, obviously I don't want the stress of competing because I get too nervous. And I want to perform because I want them to see me. I want these Egyptian teachers to see me. I want, obviously you want to be seen, maybe invited to teach there in the future. You do this as an opportunity, a stepping stone. I mean, all dancers, all professional dancers know that this is one way of getting known. So she said to me, listen, they have an open stage and it's going on all day. And the important judges that you want to be seen by, they don't sit there all day. They only go there during the competition. So if you want to be seen by them, you have to compete. And I knew she was right. And in the pit of my stomach, I thought, oh God, no, here we go again. I don't want to compete. And in my mind, I was in a place in my career where I didn't really feel I needed that recognition or that, not recognition, I want to say approval. Or sometimes you feel like you need the approval of people you look up to say like, you are good, keep going. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel I needed that, but I definitely wanted for Raya maybe to see me, to invite me to the festival. You know, I had this other idea in my head, and I thought, I don't know, the word I'm looking for is validation. I wasn't looking for validation. I wanted more like a career opportunity. And I was in my head like, well, I'm already, you know, touring with Belly Dance Superstars. I don't want to compete against my own students, because we had many, many levels of dancers in that competition. If you think there was 150 professional dancers, that's not true. I mean, it sounds glorious for me to say that I won against 150 incredible dancers, but I would say there were some very professional dancers, and then there was everything, because people just compete. They imagine how many dancers there were. So there was all levels, and I thought, well, doesn't it look bad? Because you're only as good as the people that you're competing with. You know, when you win a competition, it sounds great, but really, in reality, you have to see, well, who else is competing? Are they all incredible professionals and very experienced and it's a killer competition? Or were you the best of the pick? And so I thought about it and I had to sign up for the competition. And then I found out that it was 4 days of competition, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And of course, the last day was full. And basically, when I went to register, they told me, you have to compete today. Thursday, the first day. And I thought, they're not going to remember me. You know, if you compete the first day, they see many, many dancers. How are they possibly going to remember me? But what they do is they pick a winner from each night. And then you have to compete again, the 4 finalists. I didn't know any of this. until I was a finalist. And I thought, okay, what place did I get? They said, no, you're not placed yet. You have to compete again tonight. Because it's also kind of chaotic and you don't really get all the information that you need. So then I thought, okay, I only have one costume. So I had seen this beautiful Imanzaki Art Deco hot pink and black costume, like very asymmetrical, very something new at that time. And I had seen it from the moment I walked in the bazaar with all the costumes, but I'm a terrible shopper during festivals. I get too distracted. And on the last day, that costume was still hanging there. So I asked them how much, and I told them I wanted to wear it for the final night of the competition. And you know how they do in Egypt, they fix it right on the spot. I bought it and I wore it that night. And the video that you can see online is not my actual competition video. That's like the elimination round, or I don't know what to call it. That's on the last night. Mm-hmm. All the judges wanted to see was a few minutes of each dancer to remember. And then I did it, and then obviously I won. And then there was all this attention from CNN. I have no idea why. I think it was, I really don't know. I think it was because I was American and they were really claiming the American thing. And the other dancers were, there was two Ukrainian dancers and one Russian dancer. And this is when we started to feel like a wave of Ukrainian and Russian dancers coming into the belly dance scene. We started to notice, because before that it was Argentinian dancers that were really shining in the realm of belly dance. You know, you were noticing them. The Argentinian dancers were something different. And then came the wave of the Russian and Ukrainian dancers. And after that, it was obviously a lot of attention from the media. And I don't know if it was just timing that those years that it was really hyped. But it was really amazing. There was a lot of attention. And of course, Rai Hassan offered me to stay in Egypt and work, but that has never been a goal of mine. I don't have that kind of thick skin. Like I'm too sensitive. I think I don't have what it takes to work in Cairo. And for me, it was never a dream to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really admire dancers that do it, and I appreciate so much dancers that do it and then report back. And I follow dancers that are dancing in Cairo because I find it interesting. But I just couldn't go into the jungle. I can't. But it's amazing that they do it. But for me, it's a different, completely different approach. I wanted it for a different reason. I don't know if that answers your question.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You mentioned that you were debating if to do a competition or not, you definitely were not looking for validation. But I'm curious, did you feel extra pressure on yourself, or maybe even extra stress or fear, in a sense that, okay, but what if I don't win or don't, showcase nicely compared to others? Because you already had a status back then. You already were touring
these
belly dance superstars.
That's right. That's right. I had more to lose, let's say. So yes, absolutely. You feel me. I felt that there was this pressure, and maybe that's why I didn't want to do it in the beginning, because I thought, if I don't win, that looks really bad, you know. That I am competitive. I'm not going to say, I'm very competitive against myself. And I thought, you know, am I going to be like ridiculous if I compete and I don't even place? Like, what, that doesn't look good. It could be a bad career move. It was risky and it had the best outcome for me, but I think that's why I was so nervous, because I thought, okay, I felt I had a lot to lose. Maybe looking back, I didn't. But at the time, I really thought like, okay, I really have to do it. And there was a lot of drama because in the belly dance world, sometimes it even though you're not looking for it, it finds you. I had someone corner me in the hotel and say, why are you even competing? It's not fair. You already have a career. You should step down. This happened to me twice.
Oh,
I
wow.
only competed twice in my life, and both times I was confronted with, you need to step down from this race. Seriously, I'm not even making it up. And both times I remember feeling so attacked, so bad about it, but thinking, no. Well, the first time it ever happened, I was a less experienced dancer, and I remember my family really supporting me and saying, if this person is telling you this, is because they think you can actually win. And I thought, oh, okay, that's an interesting way to look at it. I'm so lucky to have wise people around me. And then the second time it happened, I knew better and I handled it differently, but it was still the same kind of intimidation. And there was such bad energy from some people. So I just focused on the good energy. And I said, you know what, before I went out on the stage, I said, I'm doing this for me because I love to dance. And I forgot about the judges and I just danced. And I focused on the people that were very happy for me and supportive. And honestly, to dance on a stage and to turn around and see 14 drummers, a full orchestra, I've never danced with that many musicians on stage before. And it felt amazing because it was when the competition that year, it was like a full band. There were so many drummers. I even thought, like, why do we need that many drummers? But they had a huge percussion section. And I just remember enjoying it in that moment. There was a lot of nerves before the competition, and backstage energy was very strange too. But you kind of just one of my mottos is just stay above it all. Stay like the lotus flower, just float above all the strange stuff. And that's it. That's it. It was definitely a risky move, but I trusted my teacher, and I thought, okay, if she's suggesting it, she suggested it because she said, listen, it's now or never. Then it'll be too late to compete. Like, you cannot compete when you're, she explained to me that there is an echelon. You go to Ahlan Wasahlan, you go to these festivals either as a student, as a teacher, or in the middle, where you're still a student but aspiring to be a teacher, and you have to know your time, your timing. And she felt that it was the time for me. And so I did it, and it had a very good outcome. That's all I can say. Yeah.
Wow, what an incredible story. Thanks for sharing.
I talk about the drama in the belly dance because there is. Unfortunately, there's all this talk about sisterhood and women supporting other women, and that's exactly as it should be. But many times it did feel like a weird mean girls high school story. It can become like that. It can become like that. And you have to really have good people by your side, preferably not in the dance world, that you can trust. And then have somebody in the dance world that is like a mentor or a teacher, but really has your best interest at heart. And I think then it's okay. But I've had a lot of students that I've acquired, let's say in the last 10 years, from other countries, from other situations, that have almost like a trauma about their ex-troops or their ex-teachers, or some of the sabotaging and weird things that happen, unfortunately, in this industry as a competitive industry. As the, when you talk about not just somebody that takes classes, but when you start to get competitive, especially if you're good, there can be a lot of this toxicity. So it's really important to talk about it and to air it out, and to find people that are not like that, and surround yourself with people that are not like that and that are interested in your growth as an artist, as a person, as a dancer. Everything else can just go away.
Yeah, that's so true. Both things exist in our community, and we have like stories like this, like what you shared, and at the same time stories like your relationship with your teacher, who will support and push even a ballet dance superstar at that time. That's great.
Yes, of course. And because she always was very, Tamalin is very confident about her own talent, and so that's why she can allow others to shine, because she knows she shines herself very brightly. You know, she doesn't have a complex personality, you know, and this is really important to find a teacher, not only that is good, but that is going to help you achieve your highest potential. This is something that I really enjoy doing with students. I have a dance lab that I host here in Crete for many years, because when I was traveling, you know, my travels started out a little bit at a time, like one weekend every 3-4 months, and I was so excited, and then it started becoming every month, and then towards the end it was every weekend of every month, and I was excited to stay one weekend at home, you know, it flipped, and it got to the point where I needed to slow down. I really felt an incredible desire to ground myself, because although I absolutely love teaching and traveling, too much of everything is not good. And it was many, many years, many consecutive years of being on the go, 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 and operating on adrenaline. And I was longing to ground myself. And one of the reasons why I came here to Crete, to the south of Crete, that's so quiet and country and dusty and rural, you know, is exactly because I grew up in a big city, and then I was having this high life of traveling and this and that, and I got to the point where I was deeply longing to root myself, and I did. But I obviously still want to dance and be connected with the dance community, and I really feel that dancing and teaching dance is my purpose in this life. So I didn't want to stop it altogether, and I thought, you know, maybe it's time for my students to come to me for a change, and come and experience this, the stillness of this place, which helps you search deep down inside. When you stop for a moment and you don't have your kids around you, or your family, your spouse, your work, none of the things that demand your attention away from something creative, you have more time to spend with creativity. And this was before a lot of people did retreats. Like now the retreat thing and the intensive thing is very popular, and you have many options to do it with many different teachers and in many different settings. Before it was something a little bit more rare, and this concept of like getting away to work on your dance, it was reserved more for yoga retreats. And so I started it in about, no, I started in 2012 to host here dance labs with a small amount of dancers, a very personal approach. And I started this project, I do it every year, and sometimes I have as few as 3 and 4, 5 dancers, and it's always good. And I love to do that, to focus on each dancer and see what it is they're searching for, because not everybody's looking for the same thing, and have that come out, and just be supportive. Obviously, teaching them what I can, and honing that skill they have, or whatever I see that they have, and just kind of bringing it out, bringing it to the light. And most of the time is just supporting them. It's like support that we all need.
Your decision to ground yourself in Crete, was it right after your last collaboration, big collaboration with Shakira?
Or was it not the best? Or was it happening at the same time? Maybe you were traveling back and forth because it was, if I'm not mistaken, 2010. That was your second big collaboration for the world tour for Shakira. And 2010 was more or less when you sort of relocated yourself, or at least partially, to Crete.
It just coincided. That coincided, but it wasn't the reason for. No, actually, the reason for my definite move to Crete in 2010, because I started to come to Crete in 2004. That was actually the first time that I taught a workshop here in 2004, and when I got to know this place. And in 2010, I ended my first marriage, and I decided that I needed to leave Miami, to just slow down my life. So I got a divorce. I then closed my studio because I had a studio in Miami. And yeah, I relocated. I relocated, and that was all happening simultaneously. And with Shakira, it's we do big projects together, but in between her world tours or her big shows, we've collaborated in just training sessions. So it's kind of an ongoing thing for 23 years now.
Oh, still till this day?
Yes, I worked with her this summer when she prepared her show for the VMA Awards. I don't know if you saw the last performance she did, that she used some daggers.
Yes.
Yes,
Wow.
this was this summer. And
That is
I happened it was very cool because I happened to be in Miami. I go every summer to Miami. And she's recently moved there now. She also separated and from her partner, and so she went back to Miami, and that's where we collaborated last.
How did this collaboration started?
And when she, I grew up in Miami, so when she first moved there, Shakira was breaking through to the American market. She was already famous in the Latin market, in the music industry. And so most Latin music artists, if they want to break through, as they say, in the American music market, they choose Miami because Miami is a place of, it's a huge Latin American melting pot. It's different than New York City. It's different than Los Angeles, California, where you have a lot of artists, but if you want to have like a lot of Latin American artists together, it's Miami. So it made sense for her to go there. And we met there. We met at a concert for another artist. She was looking for musicians. She was like scouting. She was scouting for musicians. She was scouting for talent. She was in a, her mind was set like, okay, I have to work from here. And she had moved from Colombia. And so she was looking for artists. And we met, and we had a conversation. I told her what I did. I gave her my card, and she investigated a little bit about me, and then her management company got in touch with me, and we met. And I basically had to do like a almost like a dance audition because she asked me to. They had asked me to choreograph one of her songs, and I did. And then the first session, she asked me to dance. She was like, "Okay, dance it." And I said the choreography, and she said, "No, dance it like you danced it." And I understood right away. I thought, okay, this is an audition. So you can imagine, I danced for my life. I danced harder than I ever danced. I think that was the hardest I've danced. I realized in this moment, okay, This is very important, you know. This I have to show her what I can do, because I mean, thanks to that, you know, she decided, like, okay, you're pretty good. No, she didn't say that. She was very humble, and I remember exactly her words. She was very gracious, and she said, "Wow, I could never dance like that." And I said, "Yes, you can." And she said, "No." But she was wowed. And I said, "Well, let's get to work." And then we worked. The first time we worked together, it was insane. It was 8 hours a day. I was a lot younger, thank God. I don't think I could do that now.
Wow.
Really, really hard worker. I mean, nobody gets to where she has reached with, you know, being lazy. She's a very, very, very hardworking person.
For you as a teacher and choreographer, because you work with many students, with many dancers, but working with a pop star for that she has her own specific goals, like she's not doing it as a hobby, or she's not trying to be like, professional dancer competing in competitions or start teaching at festivals. She has a very specific goals. How for you as a teacher and choreographer, is it different than working with any other student in ballet dance class?
Well, I mean, the goal is different, but the process is the same. Like, you're teaching steps, you're perfecting it. Like, I don't think, like, oh, this is Shakira. You know, it's For me, it's the same. And actually, I've worked with a lot of artists in other disciplines. For example, I've worked with ice skaters, figure skaters, professional ones that need to incorporate some Arabic or belly dance elements inside their routine. I even worked with a bodybuilder, a woman that was showing, you know, they have to like flex their muscles, but they're doing like a choreography with music. So, as a choreographer, to work with a belly dancer, let's say a professional belly dancer, perhaps it's easier because they are trained in this discipline. And then somebody that is not, you know, you have to, of course, teach the technique, and it's maybe not inside their body. It, specifically with Shakira, she has a lot of hip technique. She knows, I mean, she's incredibly flexible, and she can do many of the steps. But the challenge there is that it's very short. The choreographies we do, they are like every count matters, because sometimes it's just like three counts of eight, and then she has to grab the mic or grab a guitar. And so there you have to, that was a learning curve for me, because I used to think, like, well, you do this and you do that and arabesque. And she's like, no, I'm grabbing the mic in this moment. Or I need to turn around and grab a guitar. And so you adjust. But I find it really interesting. I'm a person, I get easily bored of the same thing, the same routine. So I really like to work with people that have different goals, or it's very interesting. What can I say? It's cool.
Yeah, it's interesting also to hear about this experience, because this is quite different and different field for ballet dancers. Because when we think about ballet dance careers, we think of teaching or performing or festivals or maybe gigs, but we are not really exactly thinking as a choreographers for other artists, like from other fields, who may need
For
something,
singers.
some expertise or some inspiration from our like dance genre that we are specializing in. So it's interesting to hear about this experience. Thanks for sharing.
You're welcome. You just reminded me of something really bizarre, and I wanted to share it because I know probably somewhere out there is somebody that has done this too. There was a period in my teaching career while I was living in Miami. There was like a period, and I don't know what it was, if it was a fad, something in style, but around Valentine's Day, for a few consecutive years, I always got hired or asked to teach a private, and the private consisted of a romantic dance for the partner. And I remember thinking the first time, like, okay, because this is something very different. Like, and maybe it's not for a lot of people. When I say I'm a belly dancer, it before, not so much now, but before, people used to always say, well, your husband is very lucky. And I used to think, what are they think? Do they think that I'm dancing for him every day in my house? Like, what is going on? You know, but there was this thing around it. And then this started happening. I started getting hired for a private to make a special like dance for the partner. And it was always very, very sweet. It wasn't like anything raunchy. It was a nice thought behind it, but I thought it was just curious, like interesting. And it always involved like, well, I'm gonna come out of the closet wearing this with a veil. And it was really funny. It was really unique. But again, I enjoyed the process of choreographing for a different kind of show, let's say, or with a different goal. Like I like this variety. I like this creativity. So whether it is for the stage, for a competition, for the bedroom, I find it really interesting.
Yes, that's interesting intersection between stereotypes and opportunity to introduce proper belly dance to a person, even they're coming from. But who
There you
knows?
go.
Depends on the years. Maybe it was the boom after Okloni TV series worldwide. There is a
I
lot of
think
scenes
so.
of girls dancing for their husbands.
Oh,
So.
yes. And you know, now that you mentioned El Clon, this in Miami was a huge hit. And we had in at this time the dance studio belonged to Tamalyn, to my teacher, and we used to get phone calls where people would say, can you please teach me El Baile del Clon, which means the dance of El Clon. They didn't even know what it was called. And it was very funny because at first we were like, no, well, that's not what it's called. And my teacher would just say, just sign them up for class. We'll teach them when we'll teach them, just get the registration, we'll guide them once they're here. And it was incredible. During these years, we had to knock down a wall of the studio to make more space and make a second studio, a second dance studio. That was the
Wow.
boom, like you said. It
Amazing.
was incredible.
Yeah, I think in the Western world, those two booms or two phenomena that really helped to spread and popularize belly dance, and one was El Clon or Cloni TV series, and another one was Shakira. And now we know who is
Yes.
behind that.
Guilty. Yes, yes.
Guilty.
Yes.
Speaking, if I may ask one more question about your not necessarily work, but your interactions with celebrities, because I know as a performer you also performed, entertained for many different celebrities, including Sean Connery, Madonna, Enrique Iglesias, and the list goes on and on and on. May I ask if you have anything coming up on your mind as a funny story performing for some celebrity, something that just maybe caught or got on your memory right now that you don't mind sharing with us?
Okay, yeah, there are some that I cannot share
Sure.
because yeah, but there's many, but I think my fondest where I felt a bit starstruck because most of the time I was cool, but where I felt starstruck was with Sean Connery because I'm a huge fan, and I remember in this particular trip we had been flown. It was Tamalyn and I again, Tamalyn Dalal and I. We had been flown to the Bahamas to do this particular show, and we stayed in just such a luxury place. Like they really put us in this complete luxury house all to ourselves. It was like all luxury all the way around. And we had a performance, and it was a Scottish people living there in the Bahamas in an area that's called Billionaires Row. Like all the houses are, they belong to billionaires. And it's just a lot of opulence, like so, such a contrast from the rest of the Bahamas, you know, the local people. And so we were taken on a boat ride the day of our show. The show was in the evening, and we went on this boat ride, and you know, I remember just diving into the really turquoise colored water. I love the sea. I couldn't resist, and I dove in, and I opened my eyes. At the time, I didn't have LASIK correction surgery. Now I do, but I was wearing contact lenses. So what I want to say is I lost one of my contact lenses. So then for the evening show, I couldn't see very well. I had like a blurred vision. I had one contact in, and it was very uncomfortable. So I decided not to wear my contact lenses and just do the show with a blurry vision, which is very uncomfortable, but I did it. And so I could tell where Sean Connery was sitting, but I couldn't see his face at first. So the closer we got, the more I could see that it was really him, and I became so excited when we did audience participation. I didn't dare to take him up to dance, but Tamalyn did. She took him to dance together, and then I was dancing away, and he reached to grab me to turn around to dance with me. And I remember, just because I get very shy and I want to run away, but he was almost telling me, like, don't run away, stay and dance. And for me, that was a very, very special moment. I still remember it. I still smile. I still blush because, yeah, it was Sean Connery. And we danced together, and he said to me, oh, I'm afraid I have two left feet. He was being like very gracious and very, very nice. It was a really, for me, it's such a memorable moment. And to be that close to him and be able to see his face, because I was a bit disappointed that I had lost my contact lens, and I wasn't going to be able to see this beautiful man, this great actor. And but then I got to see him very close and actually dance with him, and that was for me really, really exciting, really nice. You know, all the people that I've had, the let's say the famous people that I've had the pleasure to dance for or with, and they've always been some of the best audience members I've had. Like, maybe because they know how it feels, you know, but they've been like really kind and attentive, which is really nice. Yeah.
Wow, what a nice memory, a warm and funny memory. Thank you for sharing.
Very warm. He was very warm. Yes, that's exactly the word.
You know, I feel like I can just keep talking and talking and talking for hours and hours. I have so many more questions, and you, just because you have such a rich career, that it's a bit difficult, like, you know, to pick what to ask about. I want to ask more about everything, but I also want to be mindful about time, so I actually want to sort of jump. I know we are skipping so many things, but I cannot not ask about this specific thing. I want to ask about your current projects and current activities. I know you mentioned briefly you are doing a dance lab, you're doing Mediterranean dance lab in Crete, and it's a very individual approach to each dancer. And sometimes you mention you may have even like three, four dancers, and that's it. But can you share a little bit about this program and what exactly dancers can expect from it? Like, what's maybe their goal or idea, why would they come, why would they want to come? And is there any other projects and things, teaching or not teaching wise, that dancers can now take a look and see and maybe learn from you even more?
Thank you. The dance lab for me, it's like my labor of love, and I feel it is the kind of thing that has a long effect on dancers. So it's not as much as for example, one choreography at a workshop or a technique class at a workshop. and then that's it, goodbye. I feel that most of the dancers, when they come here to the dance lab, we establish a relationship, almost like a mentorship. So it's not everybody, but I would say 85% of the dancers that have come here, we stay in touch in one aspect or another, in as far as like career wise or dance wise, and they find in me someone that can tell them honestly, give honest feedback, help them grow, or be a cheerleader or be supportive. You know, it sometimes people come here with a very different dance style than my own, but they're looking for something in particular. And I feel it's a very good place to come and focus on your dance, to slow down and just take a deep look. That's why I call it a lab, because it's not just they come and they learn choreographies. Of course, I teach every year. I try to teach at least two choreographies so that we can do them together or they can take it home and build. But we start projects here, and a lot of times they take an idea or they take a work in progress that they came with and they take it back home when it's ready, or something is born here and then they have something to work on when they go home. So this is why I called it lab, because it's not, it's something that is experimental in that sense. We listen to music together. I also like to introduce them a little bit to Greek culture, to specifically Cretan culture, because many times I travel to places and you don't even feel where you are because you're just like in a studio all day and you don't get outside. The lovely thing about my studio right now is that it's a space. You just open the sliding doors and you're looking at the sea. It's right across from the sea. This alone, I feel, is very inspiring, not for everybody, but like I said, a huge percentage of people that come are very, very pleased. And I try to make it as organic and natural as this place is, without a lot of fancy things and like spectacular this and that. It is very down to earth. And we do perform for each other. We do a lot of improvisation and sharing, and it, you know, it reaches people. It definitely does. It's something about the aesthetic of the place and the way I work, and it's sometimes hard to put into words because I have my plan, but I don't know exactly what's going to happen until I have the group of people that I have in the room with me, and then I start my work. So I can have ideas, and I have a playlist, and I have choreographies, but trust me, it always changes a bit because I work according to the dancers that I have with me in the room. And it's a really labor of love. It's a very special thing. And I was doing it twice a year. Now I do it once a year. And the next dance lab is happening from the 29th of September until October 6th. It's a week. So it's actually 5 days of dancing and lecture and music and all of that. And, you know, one day to arrive and one day to leave. Many dancers arrive a little bit early and leave a little bit later, and they like to explore the place. But we're in the studio for 5 days. We have lunches together, and we have also some outings, but they are not required. I started it very structured in the past years. In the beginning, it was like always dinner together and always excursions together and all of this. And as I became busier with my own family, and I have an 8-year-old son, I needed to separate myself a little bit from doing so much with the group. So now it's a little bit more free, and and we do things together, but it's not like you must, and it's part of the program and part of the package. No, it's like additional stuff I suggest. We hang out if the vibe is there. I always make sure that everyone listens to local music, eats good local food, and we dance, and it's a very I think refreshing experience. I have dancers that keep coming back and they love it. It's like their second home.
And
yeah,
is the
that's Dance
registration
Lab.
And is the registration still open, and how people can find out even more information and register possibly?
Okay, they can send me a personal message through Instagram or Facebook, and then I will guide them how to register. And the registration, honestly, I have to close at 12, and right now I have 11. So I think, you know, for this year, it maybe not, because I don't want the group to be larger than 12. Otherwise, it's not, I don't know, I just like the number 12. Okay, if it's two people that want to come together, I can make an exception. But for the most part, like this year, it's, I want to say almost sold out. And but I do it every year. So just to follow me on Instagram, on Bozhenka Dance, or on Facebook, on my fan page, Bozhenka. And they, you know, if you really want to come, you will find it. I don't advertise it that much anymore. It's just people know. Well, let's say most people know. I think if you really want to study with me and come to Greece, you'll find a way. You'll find it.
Well,
yeah. And I just came back from Thessaloniki, by the way, from teaching. It's just an hour away from Crete. It was a very short plane ride, and I did a new event. It's called Belly Dazzle, and it was really fantastic. It was really, really fun. And the next event I will do is in May at Oriental Dance Meeting. That's in Spain, in Lloret de Mar. I am not traveling as much as I used to, but I still do it, and I'm doing online classes. And I have also in-person classes here. Yeah. And dancers come to, sometimes they come, if they cannot come during the dance lab, they'll come at another time during the year, and they study intensely with me, like privately for 5 days, a week. You know, I have this every year, one or two dancers come and they work privately with me. This is also an option.
Well, just so many reasons to at least find you and follow you on social media and to see announcements of upcoming events. And who knows, maybe some of our listeners or one of our listeners will be the lucky one, the catching the last spot for your dance lab.
Yes. Oh, that would be really cool. Yes. Yes. This year I have new names, new faces. So I was a little bit curious, you know. I thought, okay, I need to know who's coming. You know, when I don't know a student or they've never studied with me, I do ask them, you know, send me a video. I want to know what they move like. So it's going to be really interesting for me, because every now and then I get new blood, as I say, and it's exciting.
Yeah. Well, I definitely include links to your social media and to your website in the show notes. So everyone who is listening to us right now, you can go ahead and find and connect with our amazing guest and write about traveling to Greece to either dance lab or private classes, or maybe catching some online classes. All links will be there. And before I ask you our final question, I just want to thank you so much for taking this time and sharing and giving us a sneak peek into your dance journey, your incredible dance journey, or at least some highlights from it. I really appreciate it, and it was such a pleasure, and this hour just went by so quickly. It's like, I won't continue, I want one more.
You want part two. Thank you, Jana. Thank you so much, really. Thank you too.
And I would like to close our conversation with a traditional question. So we have one question which I ask at the end of every interview, regardless of what we have been talking about. And the question is, what makes you fall in love with belly dance again and again, so you keep doing it for so many years?
The music. I know that's not so creative, but it's the music for me.
That's
Yeah.
the true one.
It's the music for me. When I hear, and it doesn't have to be something new either, but it's like when I hear the right music, wow, I just need to dance and express it. So for me, I think I will be dancing forever because I'm not doing it for, I'm doing it for this reason. Yeah.
That's a great way to summarize.
Yeah. Now I'm curious about what everyone's answer has been. What is it for you? Can I ask you?
For me, it's more, I think, about self-exploration through dance and
Nice.
trying different characters, trying to figure out which one is truly me. I'd say something like
Oh, nice.
that.
Nice. I love that. It's true. It's true because we change so much. We should. So, like self-exploration. I like it. Thank you. Thank you for answering my question. Thank you. And for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been fun talking to you.
This episode was brought to you by the Yana Dance Club, bringing more consistency and more fun into your dance training online. Check it out at yanadanceclub.com, direct link in the show notes. And before you leave, don't forget to screenshot this episode and share it with your friends, as well as leave a review on iTunes or any other app you're using to listen to the show. The more people know about this podcast, the easier it is for me to bring even more awesome guests. Until next time, keep shimmying and keep dancing.